conference record has joined the conference.
All right. Great. I'm glad everybody could join us tonight for our topical call on how to assist children at home with school. And again, Kathy Harstead has joined us for an evening of furthering educating ourselves on what we can do to help our kids. So thanks, Kathy, for joining us. We are going to record the call in case somebody missed it so that we can load that onto the Family Voices website. So just wanted to make everybody aware of that. So, Kathy, without further ado, carry on.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Let's get started. The title of this training is on home instruction and homeschooling. And my screen is giving me a little bit of difficulty in moving from one slide to another, but I'll do my best. For some reason, it's being difficult. Okay, well, the first part of this is on home instruction, and I'm already at slide 3, but you see a picture of a house surrounded by rope and the word homebound, and that's there just because sometimes in the past home instruction has been referred to as homebound instruction, and sometimes I still hear people say that, and I always get a picture of a home bound up with rope when I hear people say that, which is why we just say home instruction nowadays. So that was my little attempt at humor. All right. Okay, so I think it's helpful on the next slide to just start out with some basic definitions. What is the difference between home instruction and homeschooling? Because there's another home word that we hear along with homework, but we're not talking about that tonight. And the difference is that with home instruction, the local school provides the service, but with homeschooling, the parents provide the service. And home instruction can be delivered at home or in a hospital setting. And homeschooling is always delivered at home. So just to start out that way. Okay. When we look at home instruction and we look at the scope of it, we can see that home instruction can be temporary or it can be ongoing. And it would include both general and special education depending on the needs of the student. That makes sense, hopefully. There are different laws and different regulations when it comes to home instruction, and I think it's important to be aware of those because sometimes, well, all the time, local school districts have district policies when it comes to home instruction. And depending on the needs of the student and whether they're how their right to home instruction is influenced by different laws comes into play. So we have federal, state, and local rules. So Section 504, for example, that would be a federal law, and so would IDEA. The North Dakota Century Code, which outlines some rights to home and schooling, is also at play. And then the district policies can influence home instruction as well as special ed guidelines. Okay. So, Let's see if we can. Deneen, I am having a really hard time scanning through this. Like, it keeps jumping slides on me. So thanks, you guys, for putting up with me. I just... Okay. So let's go to slide 7, which talks about home instruction and the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is another federal law. And the reason why I mention this is that schools who receive federal special education dollars may not provide a qualified person with a disability with an aid, benefit, or service that is not as effective as that provided to others. So this became the basis, the original basis for providing home instruction, because home instruction is sometimes provided, for example, to a football player who breaks a limb or someone who has cancer. So we can't discriminate against students who have disabilities. So if it's provided to any student, it has to be provided to students with disabilities as well. There are some, let's see if I can. So let's talk about home instruction from the perspective of IDEA. If a student has an IEP, an individual educational plan, then by definition they need specialized instruction. If they didn't need it, they wouldn't get the IEP. So if a school does not offer home instruction to a student who needs it, the student may not be receiving a free and appropriate public education or FAPE. So that's why it's so important for a team to look at whether a student needs home instruction or not. All right. Just a minute. This stupid thing is just being a poop. All right. There are other rights that come into play through IDEA that are important to know. And one of them is that a district may not arbitrarily limit the amount of time for home instruction to less than a typical school day if that would jeopardize FAPE. What does that mean? It means that if I come to you as a school district and I say to you, well, our home instruction program is 1 hour a day. That's it. And that raises an issue of whether the child is going to actually receive an appropriate education on only 1 hour a day of training, then that would not be, that would be a violation of the student's rights. Now, typically when students need home instruction, it's because they have some kind of a health concern, or injury or condition that they're recovering from or that's ongoing, and they can't safely receive services in a public building. So because of those other conditions, sometimes a student isn't able to participate in a full day of training. So that's always something to keep in mind. In other words, just because the student is at home doesn't mean that they're going to get 6.5 hours of time either on an arbitrary basis. We have to individualize to meet the needs of the student. So a team may limit the amount of time provided for home instruction in order to provide a student with an appropriate education. So if we said to the student who's at home, well, you have to get instruction at the home for 6.5 hours, and that was going to exhaust the student either physically or neurologically because of some condition that they had, then the student would have a hard time benefiting from the experience, and so that would limit FAPE. So I guess the big thing is that you have to weigh the amount of time against the unique needs of the student. And arbitrary decisions about how much should not be part of the picture. I will say this, that sometimes school districts are used to providing home instruction as a temporary service. And they're used to providing it for students from the general education program. Often, what happens in a home instruction program is sometimes the school has a home ed coordinator, but whoever they assign go in and they just review kind of what work the student needs to complete to stay caught up, and they might only get an hour a day of services, and that the parent is expected then to sort of supervise the student to complete that work. And that may work for someone in a general ed program who doesn't need specialized instruction. But that may not work for a student with special needs. And so sometimes school districts are just kind of used to operating on that basis, and they forget, oops, this is a student with an IEP. We have to stop. We can't just set an arbitrary limit on the time. We have to stop and look at this as a team and decide how much time would be appropriate. Hopefully that makes sense to everybody. I'm going to try to go to the next. But I can't.
What's it doing, Kathy?
Well, it jumps, Denine, and so it's really frustrating. Maybe if I do it this way. Huh. Well, that wasn't any help. Just a minute. Maybe if I do it that way. Yeah, see, it doesn't have anything at the bottom that I can click on and move it down very well. So I just have to work with it. All right. 9, 10. Okay. So there are some big ideas that come into play when we're looking at home instruction. First of all, it is a very restrictive level of services. In fact, it is the most restrictive level of services that are available. Schools are required to provide a continuum of services because one size does not fit all. And so home instruction has to be on the continuum. But it's restrictive because it cuts off, in many cases, access to typically developing peers. And it can cut off access to learning in groups. And we do, as humans, we learn in groups and we learn differently in groups than we do on a one-to-one basis. But when it is necessary, it can be the most appropriate level of services available for students. Some students just need it. Okay. Going on to the next slide, if I can get there. What are the considerations that we would look at in determining as a team that a student needs home instruction? Teams can look at both the health and well-being of the student and the health and well-being of others. And that's kind of sometimes for some of us who are parents, that second part, it can be a little difficult because we sometimes see teams are considering whether a student is a risk to other people. And we would like to say, oh, well, we'll only consider number one. But teams actually have to consider both of those. So covering the impact of it, sometimes parents are seeking home instruction without really thinking about the impact of what that is. So it's important as a team that we look at the impact. This is what the impact of home instruction has been on other students with disabilities. Will that be the case with this student? I'm getting the hang of this now. So the first set of impacts that we looked at were kind of a negative impact on a student. But there can also be a positive impact depending on the student. It can create a safe learning environment. It can be a very flexible arrangement. It can allow the student to get medical or health supports that can't be delivered somewhere else. It might minimize the sensory challenges for a particular student. It might help them to focus more or give them even increased instructional time. And I will say that while students spend 6.5 hours a day in school, they don't necessarily get 6.5 hours of continuous instruction. Aside from the time they spend out at recess or, say, in the lunchroom, even in a regular general ed classroom, the teacher is not sitting down with them one-on-one and providing instruction for 6.5 hours a day or 6 hours a day. There are times in between where the student is transitioning from activity to activity, where the student may be practicing on their own or within a group, playing a game, doing a group activity to reinforce the use of skills, that kind of thing. So when a team looks at how much time a student needs for home instruction, then they need to consider that. So when we go into making decisions about home instruction, you know, we don't want to be making those based on our fear or suspicion or a fixed position or something that's really a bad idea. We want to be concerned about the student and other students. We want to make the decision based on good information about the impact of home instruction and use some wisdom and even creativity. So decisions are made where the team considers whether the student has a disability-related condition that will impact their attendance or participation for all or part of a home day. And it is possible to develop an IEP where a student gets home instruction for part of the day and attends school for part of the day. In that, there's nothing in the law to prevent a team from doing that. Okay, I'm just going to tweak this a little bit. All right. So the questions we ask ourselves is, will participation limit educational benefit to where the student's well-being is threatened? Participation in a regular school program or, you know, going into the school building. So we've had students with autism that have needed home instruction. We've had students recovering from cancer that have needed home instruction. We've had students with multiple disabilities getting home instruction. And we've had all of those same students getting instruction in the school building. So this really gets decided on a case-by-case basis. Another good question to ask is the participation in the regular school day impractical while a condition must be treated or stabilized? So you have a child with Down syndrome who develops diabetes and has to start taking insulin and their blood sugar is really up and down for a little while. They might need home instruction on a very short-term basis. Sometimes, you know, schools will set policies in that if the student isn't going to be out for, you know, if they're only going to be out for 3 days, let's say, we don't do home instruction. It won't kill them. It won't jeopardize their receiving a free and appropriate public education to miss for 3 days. If they're going to be out for 3 weeks, that's another matter. The team has to look at that then. There, even though the school might set a policy, we won't do home instruction unless they're going to be out for X amount of time, which schools have every right to do, the team is still charged with meeting the unique needs of that student and deciding how an IEP must be carried out when the student can't be in school. So that doesn't mean that you can't, as a parent, say, well, I understand this is the policy and that makes sense to me, but in this case, we have such and such a situation. When it comes to documenting the need for home instruction, North Dakota, as a state, doesn't have specific guidelines. And teams may ask for documentation of the medical need for the restrictive placement. So typically, if I were to come in as a parent and say, well, I think my kid needs home instruction, and they would say, why? And I would say, well, I just, you know, there needs to be some kind of reason why my child can't be in school. And the school may ask me to provide the documentation for that. Okay. All right. If you were to go into various communities across North Dakota, and I just picked these arbitrarily, you could there are differences from school to school in terms of what their policies are, in terms of the number of hours that they support in home instruction, and in terms of the certification that they require the home instructor to have. So one of the things I urge parents to be careful about is just comparing notes, because those policies can differ across the state. And you still need to know what your rights are and the policy is in your specific community. Most districts do limit the number of hours that home instruction will be provided to general ed students in a given day. So, when we have a student with a disability who needs home instruction, then we have to consider FAPE and educational benefit. FAPE is designed, free and appropriate public education must be free. It must meet the unique needs of the student. It must meet state standards in terms of the quality of the instructor. It has to provide educational benefit. There are alternatives to providing home instruction. Oh, just a minute. This thing is not helping me. Depending on the length of time, the student will not be able to be in the school. There are things like homework packets, adjusted hours, half-day, part-days, a quiet classroom, setting up a remote TV, or setting up peer visits. And so any of those options can be used by a team along with home instruction. And I particularly like the ones where we do set up, you know, we have options now with FaceTime and Skype and other kinds of remote TV possibilities so that we can give the student, even when they're home, an opportunity to view into that regular classroom. The home instruction teacher must meet the definitions to be a highly qualified instructor. I'm going to pause at this point before we go on and talk about homeschooling. I wanted to see if there were any questions or situations that people wanted to talk about.
Kathy, this is Vicki. I'm not sure if you can hear me because I'm losing my voice.
I can, Vicki.
But I had a question for you. In a situation, if a student is on an IEP with some significant mental health issues, And the parent and the school have had some meetings, and they've talked about, you know, least restrictive environment, and they've tried different areas, and now the school is suggesting that this child receive its education at a place like Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch. And the parent is wanting to see if home education would help, and kind of I think that, you know, in this situation, the team is kind of saying, no, we need to send him to Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch because we can't teach him at home. Is that a reason for a parent to get more guidance on that, or can the school just say, no, we're not going to do home?
I don't know what you mean by get more guidance, but I can certainly respond to the situation. And I think that in the continuum of services, home instruction is going to be viewed as more restrictive than a residential placement. And the reason it is because in a residential placement, the student has an opportunity to be with other students and learn in groups. And because in the residential placement, they may have access to behavior intervention services that would help address, you know, there's nothing, having a mental health challenge is not usually what keeps a person out of the school. It's the behaviors that go along with that. And so those have aspects of behavior that might need to be addressed medically as well as behaviorally. The team in that case would have to be asking itself whether it's the boys' ranch or home instruction, what will the plan be to build a way back for the student? Is it feasible from either setting to construct a plan that will gradually move that student back into the regular public school? And too often when we have residential placements, we don't do that kind of planning from the beginning. Because often people who are human, if there are difficulties behaviorally, they kind of need a break. And they're so focused on getting the student into what they view as a better placement that they don't think about how we're going to get them. You know, that's only a first step. Sometimes residential placements become a longer step, especially for students where the home they would go back to is not safe for them. So I'm not trying to diss residential placement, but I think whether it's home instruction or residential placement, we have to think about that. I would encourage that parent to think about those pieces that I said before. What are the benefits of the home instruction? And what are the benefits of the residential placement? And what are the drawbacks of each one? And to do that in the team environment. Often in these kinds of situations, you know, we kind of get into we think you need to do this. And no, I'm not going to do that. Instead of moving out of that argument and just looking at the needs of the student. What makes one or the other of those two options least restrictive for the student? Those decisions have to be justified. And so the team has to really look at that together. Sometimes you're dealing with unknowns. There are risks involved in both situations, and you have to consider the needs of the student with the emotional or behavioral challenges and the needs of other students and their right to learn as well. But what will happen with each placement is a relative unknown. We think this is the least restrictive because of blah, 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 but there are risks for making the decisions. And so you want to do some risk management when you look at that and say to yourself as a team, well, how could we decrease the likelihood of this or that? And that helps you to make the decision as to which is least restrictive.
So, Kathy,
go ahead, Vicki.
If a team is divided, if IEP team is divided,
if sometimes
over whether that home should happen or the least restrictive would be a residential setting. Is that a time that IDA plays a part of that? I mean, is that when the parents start thinking about getting facilitation as well?
Whenever you have a dispute like that, I'm going to assume that the parent and the school, they're all caring people who want to do the best for the student, but they just have real differences in how they're looking at it. And so it can be very beneficial to go with either a facilitated IEP meeting or mediation in that case to try to work through those kinds of challenges. And that doesn't mean anybody's bad. It's just this is hard. Some of this decision-making is really hard. And so it's nice to have those services available in our state.
Does IDA have any time limit then on those? I mean, in the meantime, this child is kind of sitting in an atmosphere that is not very beneficial for education while the team is being divided.
I think IDEA would say that in the absence of agreement on a new IEP, because if you're going to change placement to either home or residential, then you're going to have to create a new IEP to support that. And in the absence of an agreement on how to do that or which placement to choose, then the stay put clause in IDEA would come into play. And that would mean that the student would continue under whatever existing IEP they have. But what sometimes happens is either the school sends a student home or the parent pulls them out and they kind of get caught in limbo, regardless of what IDEA says, and that can be a critical time to make sure as either a parent or an educator that we're not stuck in something like that, that we don't get bogged down in a conflict and as quickly as possible we move into a better decision-making process so that if a student, like you say, is in a not ideal situation, they can get out of that non-ideal situation as quickly as possible. Did that answer your question, Vicki?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. Pathfinder also assists schools and teams with early dispute resolution, and so, parents can contact us or schools can contact us and say, would you sit down with us and just see what we can put our heads together and what we can come up with. As a parent, the idea of sending your child to a residential placement can be really scary. And so I think it's really helpful to see the placement if you can, to break that down, to take a look at it so that when you are considering as a member of the team which of two options to look at, you're making an informed decision. Okay, any other questions?
Kathy, I resent you your slides. I don't know if you're able to open them.
Let's see. Bless your heart. I don't know if that's going to make any difference. It's probably going to do the same thing. Nope. It's got the little thing on the bottom. Ha ha! Deneen, you are wonderful.
Well, I had to dig a little, so it took me a little bit.
Okay. Okay, so homeschooling. First of all, I just have a disclaimer on homeschooling because homeschooling is a topic that people are very passionate about. And our state has been an ardent supporter of parent rights to homeschool their child. When I say our state, I mean the people in our state legislature. And people who are pro-homeschool think it is wonderful. And people who are against homeschooling think it's terrible. And I don't know how what anybody on the call feels, but the information that I'm sharing is meant to be neutral and not tell anybody that they're good or bad, you know, if they are for or against that particular option. Okay, just to review, home instruction, the local school provides the service. Homeschooling, the parents have decided to provide the services. All right. So just some background facts. You can see on the slide, there are a lot of students whose parents elect to do homeschooling. And they can get federal financial aid. They graduate at higher rates. And there are North Dakota Century Code regs that govern homeschooling. And they're pretty straightforward. So I would encourage any parent that is considering the idea of homeschooling, particularly at one time in North Dakota, you could not homeschool a child with special needs. And that was changed, oh gosh, several sessions ago. So that is no longer the case. And why do people decide to homeschool their child? There's a variety of reasons. Maybe this is a family who has a history of doing that with all their children. Maybe they just have a strong interest in education, and they believe that providing that through home is, you know, just a way to provide a lot more individual attention. Some families decide to homeschool because of a strong belief set related to their faith. Sometimes families get into homeschooling because their child needs a particular approach and they just don't see it consistently being provided in a public or private school setting. And sometimes where a parent lives, there might be limited choices. Those are all reasons why parents have chosen to homeschool their kids. So do we have a right to homeschool our child if they have a disability? Yes, we do. As parents, but some conditions need to be met. We have to be able to meet the general homeschool requirements and then any disability-related requirements. So homeschooling applies to children ages 7 to 16. And who have a developmental disability that's been determined by a licensed psychologist. So we can't declare our child has a disability and then we're going to homeschool them. It doesn't work that way. There are compulsory attendance laws that apply to children, but not when they're being homeschooled. Okay, so there are different options for parent qualifications to homeschool your child. You could be certified to teach in North Dakota or have a bachelor's degree or be monitored by a certified teacher, pass a national teacher exam, or have a high school diploma or GED. There are requirements. You can't homeschool your child and then just do anything. You have to have a minimum of 4 hours a day of instruction for 175 days a year. It has to encompass the range of instruction that's taught in public schools. The student still has to take standardized tests or an alternative assessment if they have real multiple, if they qualify for that. And the parents have to file the results or report of how the student did with the superintendent of their local district. When you decide to homeschool your child, you have to give a notice of intent that has to be filed with the local or county superintendent 14 days before you begin the process. Or within 14 days of moving into a district, if you move in new and you're going to homeschool. And I've put a resource on your slide for you to look at that process. There's an application or not an application, but a notification form that the Department of Public Instruction has put together that has all of the information. You can use the form or you can simply send a letter with all of the information. Either way is fine. And you can see some of the information that you need. There's record-keeping requirements to homeschool your child, and so they're listed here. If your child scores below the 50th percentile on a standardized achievement test, then there's some monitoring that comes into play. And the basis in law for that is included. There has to be some progress reporting that's prepared by the IEP team. And honor before those dates of each school year. The standardized tests are used in these grades, although I'm looking at that now. I put that together right out of the Century Code, but I think we're doing standardized tests in more than those grades now in North Dakota. So I'm going to find out how that applies into homeschooling. I'm sorry, I should have looked that up earlier. But a certified teacher has to administer the test at home or in the local school at the option of the parents and provide the results. So even though you've decided to homeschool your child, you know, there's some, the Department of Public Instruction through the local system is still responsible for supervision if that child has special needs. And that's carried out by making sure they take the assessments and that you report the results. If the student is performing below 30%, then the multidisciplinary team must be involved. There must be a plan of remediation, an IEP, that's been approved by a state-certified teacher. And that plan will stay in effect until the scores go back up. As a parent, you have a right to decline special education services. That kind of didn't used to be the case, but it was changed in the last reauthorization of IDEA. If you do that, you have to notify the school that you're withdrawing your child from special ed, and you want to make sure that they get the letter, because you don't want to be caught under any compulsory ed laws if you decide to do that. There are a number of resources that are available to people who decide to homeschool their children, and so I've listed those for you. And that's the information that I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Anybody have any questions at all for Kathy about home instruction and homeschooling?
This is Vicki again. When you say be certified to teach, so if a parent, even though they might meet one of those qualifications with a high school diploma, could they actually hire a teacher to be doing that teaching then?
Yeah, they could.
Not even be in that school system. And that works for special education as well.
They could. I mean, they're going to look at whether that's a highly qualified person, if that person can provide the specialized instruction that's needed on the IEP, but definitely a parent could hire someone to do it. When you get into that, homeschooling is usually provided by the parents. So if you're hiring an outside person, it's almost getting to be a little bit like private school.
Mm-hmm. And so do you know what, like, average costs are to homeschool? I mean, there can be a cost to this. Is that correct or not?
There can be a cost. I don't have any data on the average cost, but one of the things I have learned is that the Department of Public Instruction and, in fact, any state employee, if you submit those kinds of questions in writing, if they know the answer, they're required to answer them. So you could ask them. I don't know if they collect data on the cost of homeschooling. You could check on with the North Dakota Homeschooling Association. There's a very strong homeschooling association in North Dakota. They may have some figures for you. A lot of that depends on, you know, if you have to buy a particular curriculum, if you have to buy or, you know, hire someone to provide the instruction, you know, and then costs can go up.
And so can you also, like, just like you could with home instruction, maybe part of the day at school and part of the day at home in homeschooling, can you choose some of those?
I think you might run into problems with that, Vicki, depending on where you are. I mean, every school district sets its own policy on that. And some districts are pretty, nope, if you want to homeschool, you homeschool. If you want to send your kid to school, you send the kid to school. You know, now, if you have some other reason why you need to do it that way that's based on the child's unique disability-related needs, you'd have to make your case. And I can't think of an example of that off the top of my head, Vicki, but you might be able to. Some districts, for example, will allow a student who's being homeschooled to participate in sports, and others do not. Right.
And so do you know if North Dakota DPI has any of their own materials out on this? Or
I have not found any on their webpage. Have you?
No, and I think you and I have talked about this before.
Yeah, well, I just thought since last we talked, maybe you found something.
No,
I think originally there was some concern on the part of the Department of Public Instruction, and some of the people that were involved are not in the same leadership roles they once were, but about when that law first passed that allowed parents of children with special needs to homeschool their kids, they testified about their concerns about what would happen to these children in a homeschooling situation. And so the legislature responded to that by enacting the law it did and putting those provisions in it because they didn't want to totally take that right away from parents. But when it comes to posting information on their site, a lot of detailed information about, homeschooling, I think the department has just had other priorities that they work on.
Yeah.
You know, they're redoing the autism guidelines. They just redid the intellectual disability guidelines. So they haven't got around to homeschooling.
Right. I guess, you know, I'm kind of interested in, you know, what percentage of families are homeschooling their child that has a disability. I mean, I hear more that are in just a general education setting if they were
right.
In school.
I believe the department has those data and that if we're really interested, we could get them. They would know the percentage of students who are being homeschooled and which percentage of those have an IEP.
Mm-hmm.
They might have to put two pots of data together, but they could get the information on that. As far as the cost of those, that's really known only to the parents, so I don't really see how they would know. You could ask them, though, and if they did know, they would, you know, tell you what they knew.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't give you the specific cost of a specific parent. Or do anything, you know, that would breach confidentiality, and I'm sure they never would.
So do you find that maybe if a parent went to the school and asked about homeschooling, that the school itself wouldn't have
just about the same information that you're providing us.
Right. I mean, some schools, right, they would give you that. Or some schools I know have just said to the parent, well, you're going to have to, there are some procedures, you'll have to go to the DPI website and get something. And that's all the information parents have gotten. The schools aren't really obligated to provide parents with in-depth information on homeschooling. That's not their job, so they don't have to do that. Some schools have referred parents to the Homeschooling Association.
And that's probably the best support that you see, that you have found since you started.
Well, yeah, I don't know that they have in-depth stuff on students with special needs. So much of that is the unique needs of the student.
Right.
They're more for students who are general ed. But they probably have some parents in their association who do have children with special needs, and they could at least maybe link you up with those parents. They might be willing to do that.
Okay.
I don't know that the information I'm sharing is kind of a magic answer. A lot of times when I talk to parents about homeschooling, they fall into two groups. The parents who just really want to do it because they feel that's the best way to help their kid. And the parents who are really thinking about it because they're not satisfied with what's happening. But when I try to find out, you know, if that's what they really want to do, what they would rather have happen is for the situation to improve.
Sure.
So if you are prepared to do it and you're prepared for the time and the commitment and the expense and you really want to do it because you know you can provide an outstanding service for your child, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a right that you have. You have to think about a lot of things when you homeschool, and some of that stuff as far as access to, you know, for some families there are a lot of brothers and sisters, and so they can provide, you know, access to typical peers,
mm-hmm,
and that kind of thing. But for other families, not so much. And I think that parents also need to think about their need for respite if they're going to homeschool.
Sure.
But the same decision that would be wrong for one family is right for another, so it depends on a lot of circumstances.
So the same is for parent qualifications, whether your child is in special ed or general ed for homeschooling?
Yes.
Any other questions at all for Kathy? Well, I'm sorry, Kathy, what were you going to say?
Oh, I just said I heard some more beeps, so people are leaving us, Janine, I think. I don't know.
That was my computer, Kathy.
Oh, it was. Oh, okay.
Any
How
other?
How many people did we have registered, Janine?
We had 13.
Oh, okay.
Any confusion at all about some of the topics that were raised this evening that you may need clarification on, or?
If I confused anyone, I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I'm just.
Just checking. Okay. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay, well, if there are no questions, we're going to end the call for tonight. Kathy, thank you so much for, I learned, again, some new information, so thank you very much.
I did
you're
too,
welcome.
Thank you. Great presentation.
You're welcome. And I enjoyed our conversation, Vicki.
I hope.
Yeah, you know, I like it when people just ask questions or just say things, just talk, because that's a better way to do it. And I apologize for my technical difficulties.
Thanks no
for
worries.
Putting up with
everybody.
Okay. You guys take care.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.